Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts. I'm David Fleming. The sole focus of tonight's program is Kathy Young.
A thousand stars in the sky, like the stars in your eyes, they say to me.
Kathy had only been on stage twice before the release of A Thousand Stars, and then suddenly she was touring with the likes of Ray Charles, the Shirelles, and more. Later in the program, we'll hear about her getting kidnapped by the Everly Brothers, in a fun way, except the nearby army base thought it was real. Just ahead, how going to the Wink Martindale show to be in the audience led to Kathy Young and the Innocents recording A Thousand Stars.
I went to the Wink Martindale show to see Frankie Avalon. You know, I was 14 years old. I had wanted to be a singer since I was about 5 years old. Played the guitar, you know, wrote music, read music. My mom was the choir director in our church, so I grew up with music. My mom and dad both played guitar and sang. And funny enough, I recorded my first record when I was 5 years old.
What?
Just on a home recording machine for my parents. Just a friend had a home recording machine, one of those old things. I recorded How Much Is That Doggy in the Window when I was five. And honestly, when I heard music coming out of that speaker, I just fell in love with that sound and how it made me feel. I was serious at five. I knew this. So I just started playing and singing all the time and sang in the church choir, and then I sang in glee club in junior high. And I was determined that I was going to be a singer. So I had written to all the record companies in Hollywood, and they had, of course, written back, you know, don't call us, we'll call you, which I wish I'd have kept one of those letters, but I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Any of them. And so I found out, I don't remember how I did this, but I found out I could rent a studio and a band and cut a demo record for about $175. So I was going to do that and take the record to a record company, take the demo and say, here, listen to this. I'm good. Well, I didn't have $175, but I belonged to a girls' club. We were just a fun group of girls that we got together and had sleepovers, hot chocolate Saturday mornings, you know, went to Wink Martindale shows. They were going to loan me the money to this, the girls' club. We were having car washes and spaghetti dinners and things like that because they had heard me sing in choir and all the time, and they believed in me. It was incredible. Absolutely. So we went to the Wink Martindale show to see Frankie Avalon, and I'm sitting where I can kind of look down into the green room. The show was outdoors. And so I'm looking down, and I see this man walking around talking to the artists that were on the show. And so after the show, we were out in the amusement park, and I saw him, the same man, and I went thinking to myself, this man knows people in Hollywood. He knows singers. I don't know anybody. I'm from Long Beach. I'm just a little, you know, junior high school girl. I don't know anybody at all. So I just went up to him and I said, sir, I said, how do you make a record if you don't know anybody in Hollywood? I'm going to be a singer, but I don't know anybody. And you know people. Can you tell me how to do this? And I'm just like, blah, 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 blah. You know, talking his ear off.
Would this be Jim Lee by chance?
It sure was.
Okay, okay.
And so then all the girls came and surrounded him. And then my mother came over and asked him, is she bothering you? And he said, no, no. Is she serious? And all the girls said, yes, she is. And my mom said, yes, she's very serious. She plays all day, all the time, sings. So he just stood there and looked at me. And I can remember this like it was yesterday. He just stared at me. And I'm just staring right back at him like, please. He reached back, pulled out his wallet, pulled out a business card, handed it to me and said, I have some friends that own a record company. I'm going to call them, tell them I've heard you sing, and that they should give you an audition. I was just, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't believe this. Whoa. So I thanked him very much, went home, and I practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced for 3 weeks. I had to be the absolute very best I could be.
Yes.
So when I called, he answered the phone. He had gotten a job working for Indigo Records in the 3 weeks that I had been practicing to try to be really good.
Nice.
And he said, where have you been? He goes, I've been waiting for you to call. And I said, well, you know, I had to be the very best I could be, and I had to really practice. And he said, are you? And I said, yes, I am.
Hmm.
He said, okay, come on in tomorrow. So I went in the next day, sat down, played a song I'd written. He pulled out some sheet music, asked me if I read, and I said, yes, I do. I played this song, and he said, okay. He goes, why don't you come back tomorrow night, and let's do a test record. I live in Long Beach, so it's quite a drive, but it was definitely worth it.
Yeah.
So I went back the next night for a test. He said, great, come back tomorrow night. We're going to cut a record.
Whoa.
I went back the next night, which happened to be on the end of the Innocence album session. They had already had the hit Honest I Do.
Mm.
They were recording their album and recording their next hit record, which was Gee Whiz.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, so they had the band there already and had everything all set up. So I just came in, I don't know, it was like 11:30, midnight, something like that. So the guys are leaving. I start singing, but they're kind of standing off in a corner. I'm just singing with the band, and the song that I was singing was A Thousand Stars. They just started harmonizing over in a corner, and Jim said, hey, that sounds pretty good. Put a mic on them. Take 52 later was A Thousand Stars. 3 weeks later, it was out. 3 weeks later, it turned number one on my 15th birthday in Los Angeles.
On your 15th. Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe that? There's one more little catch here.
Please.
So the day that I was supposed to go in for the audition, well, I was so excited. Went home, went over to my best friend's house. She had a pool. She and I always competed. So she's going to dive in one end of the pool. I'm going to dive in the other end. We have beach towels wrapped around us like Hawaiian girls. We're going to see who can swim underwater to the other end and, you know, get there first. So I start to dive in, and I'm diving in the shallow into the pool. My towel started to fall off. I grabbed for it. I went straight to the bottom. Knocked myself out. My girlfriend pulled me out of the water. I had a terrible, terrible concussion. So it took me another 3 weeks to feel good enough and not have everything spinning around in my head to say, yes, I can go and do the best job I can.
Oh, my.
So my mom called the next day and told him because I was just heartbroken. I thought, oh, my gosh, I just lost my big chance. He said, just tell her to feel better and call again when she can. So it was another 3 weeks. During that 3 weeks, a disc jockey from Bakersfield sent the song A Thousand Stars to Indigo Records for the Innocents as their follow-up song to Honest I Do.
Okay.
But the record company said, you know, a guy's group, the Revelers, had done it a few years before, and they felt a girl should do it. But they didn't have a female singer at the time. And so Jim said, I think I have a girl.
Nice.
And so when I called, he had A Thousand Stars in his hands. He was waiting for me to come in just to show him, yes, I could sing. So that was how Kathy Young and the Innocents came to do A Thousand Stars.
Listening to KVCR, it's on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Kathy Young in San Bernardino soon with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll, Volume 2. More at affordablemusicproductions.com.
You had just turned 15. Were you right away propelled to touring and Dick Clark and all that kind of stuff? I know at some point you were nicknamed the Cinderella of show business, and my first thought was it was because you had to be home by midnight. You were still in high school or whatever.
That too. I just went from going into the 10th grade in high school, just a regular kid, to boom, just like that. I was on American Bandstand. I was back east. I was touring for 2-3 weeks at a time, you know, working with all these incredible, fantastic people that I absolutely adored and loved. And I just had to keep pinching myself saying, I'm really doing this. This isn't a dream.
Yeah.
So I had to change and go to a private school in Hollywood. And Brenda Lee was one of my classmates.
Oh, cool.
And she became best buddies. She was doing the same thing. She was on the road all the time, and she had to have a school like that as well. And she was somewhat based out of Hollywood, but she still, you know, lived in Nashville. But yeah, we had a great time. She'd come over to my house, and we'd have a slumber party, the two of us, and act like we were just normal teenagers. She came down to stay all night with me down in Long Beach, and we decided we would go to Disneyland the next day. And so we said, okay, we're going to be just normal teenagers. You're going to be Brenda Lee. I'm going to be Kathy Young. We're going to flirt with boys. We're just going to have a great time. We're going to be just teenage girls. So we're standing in line for the Cars, you know, Utopia. These two cute boys came up behind us, and they're flirting with us, and we're flirting back with them. And they said, hi, you know, what's your name? And so I said, well, my name's Kathy Young, and this is Brenda Lee. And they just looked at us and said, yeah, I'm Fabian, and this is Frankie Avalon. Turned around and walked away. And so we said, okay, so much for being ourselves.
I guess you were safe. You weren't mobbed just then.
No. Oh, it was fun.
That's too funny. That is fantastic. Some of the folks, you just mentioned Brenda Lee as a classmate, but it seems you also had a lot of touring for, I don't know, some time, touring with Roy Orbison. I have the Everly Brothers written down, the Shirelles. Oh, Neil Sedaka, too. So were these kind of showcase concert tours, where much like what you'll be at in San Bernardino in mid-August? Is that the same kind of thing with a whole bunch of acts and then a few songs per performer? What type of tours were these?
Oh, you know, sometimes it was like that. I remember doing one really big show at the Brooklyn Paramount, and that was a show that was for 2 weeks during Christmas vacation, between Christmas and New Year's. And many, many, many of those names that you just said were on one show. It was humongous.
Wow.
I can't remember if we had 4 or 5 shows a day. It started at about noon, and everybody would do one song, 2 songs. Ray Charles was on that show, Brenda Lee, Bobby Rydell, the Shirelles, the Blue Notes, Dante and the Evergreens, Bo Diddley, Neil Sedaka. I mean, it was just an incredible, incredible show. Then other shows, we would drive. I had a road manager, and my mom and my road manager, and I would drive from one town to another town to another town in one night.
Mm-hmm.
And we would do sock hops, where
I would just
run in, walk up on stage, sing 1 or 2 songs, say bye, run back out, get in the car, drive another 50 miles to another high school, sock hop. And all of those were usually like the high school band would be playing. And I honestly don't even know who else was on the show, because I would just be in the door and out the door. But no rehearsal time with the band. And these are young guys that, you know, aren't pro musicians by any means. So I always carried my guitar with me, because I didn't want them to feel uncomfortable. So I would just say, hey, guys, you know, just follow me. I'll play.
Nice.
You just follow what I'm playing. And then I'd be back out the door and onto another show. And then there would be bus tours, where one time it was Roy Orbison, Dick and Dee Dee, Gary U.S. Bonds, me. So we did about a week's worth of, you know, one town. So much fun. Just incredible. And I have to tell you, everybody then and everybody now, they are just the nicest, nicest people. I think, especially back then, I was, you know, just young teenager, and most everybody was quite a bit older than me, and they all just treated me like their little sister. Just everybody looked after me and helped me do homework and kind of give me pointers, because I hadn't been doing this.
Sure.
But it was so fun.
I could really see some of these folks maybe only being in their mid-20s and still be looked at as a lot older than you.
Right.
You're 15 or so.
I wasn't the only one that started so young. There was a lot of us girls and guys that started 14, 15 years old. It just seems a little unheard of now to have such fame like we did back then. But wow, it was so great.
Yeah, it's always a surprise when I'm looking back at these. I think Lala Brooks, there's a good example. She was, I think, 13 when she did To Do Ron Ron or something like that.
Something
to
like
that effect.
That.
But yeah, it's incredible. I'm seeing more and more of these. And I won't stop asking people about what it was like in high school to be, well, sometimes it's a big kick. Sometimes you're carrying a weight on your shoulders, I'd say. That's Kathy Young, part of the lineup with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2 in San Bernardino, August 18th, along with the Dukes of Doo-Wop, Charles Weldon, Gene Chandler, Jimmy Clanton, Larry Chance and the Earls, Norman Fox and the Rob Roys, and from the Platters, Sonny Turner. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. This edition of KVC Arts is devoted entirely to Kathy Young, known best for A Thousand Stars, though she recorded with Chris Montez and toured with some highly successful acts after barely having turned 15. Later this segment, what happened with Kathy during American Bandstand to make them have to go to a commercial break? She was there to promote Happy Birthday Blues. Birthday Blues. Let's just touch on that briefly. This was, I guess, looked at as the follow-up to A Thousand Stars. It did hit the charts, number 30 or so, I believe, in the early 60s, 61 or so. Were any of these songs that you wrote, or were these all coming from management, or how was that end of things handled?
I was lucky enough to write the B-side of A Thousand Stars, and I wrote the B-side of Happy Birthday Blues.
Okay.
But Jim Lee, who was my manager, he wrote Happy Birthday Blues and felt it was a good follow-up to A Thousand Stars. I was only 15, and at that time, I didn't really have much of a voice in what was being produced. But I personally didn't feel at the time that it was the right song. I felt it was too much like A Thousand Stars. And so why would people go for Happy Birthday Blues when they already had A Thousand Stars? But it was a great song. I loved the intro with Jim West of the Innocents singing that. I felt that was really different. And maybe that was what would catch people, because it started off with a male and then it was, you know, a girl. It's kind of a funny story because I did record it when I was 15, but it turned out to be my 16th birthday. The story of the song. The boy that I kind of had a crush on at the time and who I wasn't really dating, but had a date with for my 16th birthday, he stood me up on my birthday.
No.
So later I thought, wow, that's kind of funny. I recorded that when I was 15, but it turned out to be true.
Oh, wow, that's a prophetic.
Got the happy birthday blues.
Happy birthday blues.
You know what? I'm glad that you mentioned writing the flip side. I had this written down to ask you much later. So, Eddie, my darling, I enjoy this tune as much as A Thousand Stars. And that, if I'm not mistaken, was the flip side for A Thousand Stars.
Eddie, my darling, was the flip side. And that was the song that I sang when I went in for my audition. I had written that song in a dream when I was 13. I woke up in the middle of the night and I had this song playing in my head, and I just grabbed a piece of paper and wrote it down. And so when I went in for the audition with Jim Lee at Indigo, and I thought, I don't want to sing somebody else's song. I want to sing my own. And so that was what I sang. And when we went in to record A Thousand Stars, Jim didn't have a song for the flip side. And he said, you have a song you want to do? And I said, yeah. You bet.
Sweet.
So we recorded Eddie, My Darling. And then when we recorded Happy Birthday Blues, he asked again the same thing. And I said, oh, yeah, you know, Someone to Love. You bet. So I got to do two of them.
That is such an opportunity. I mean, not only were you propelled to stardom with one song and 3 weeks later you were there, but you were afforded the opportunity to put your own stuff out there as well. And nobody's going to not turn 1,000 stars over. Nobody's going to not be curious about what they're including with that. That is incredible. That is truly incredible. You ended up on American Bandstand. This is from your website, I believe, maybe 4 times. And that's, I know that because I saw the photograph of this. This is where you got your gold record for 1,000 stars. Dick Clark actually gave it to you, yeah?
He did. What an absolutely surprising moment that was. I had no idea. I mean, I knew it was number one, you know, in most of the United States. Billboard gave me number 3.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cashbox, which is not around anymore, gave me number 1. And so I knew, you know, it was pretty big and everybody was playing it and everybody loved it. But I had no idea that it sold 1 million records. You know, that just didn't seem possible. So I was on American Bandstand to promote Happy Birthday Blues. And I had sung Happy Birthday Blues on stage. You know, the show's live. No taping back then. Not to tape and play later. You know, it was live right then.
Yeah.
And so I'm waiting, you know, for the music to start for 1,000 stars. And there's no music. And I'm looking around. Okay, guys, you know, what's going on? And here comes Dick, walking across the stage. He walked up to me and pulled from behind his back a gold record and handed it to me. I just stood there with my mouth open, going, And then I started crying.
On live TV.
And I cried. And then I'm absolutely sobbing. I'm not kidding. I mean, I was just unhinged. And Dick's going, come on, Kathy, this is a live show. And I'm like, I can't help it. And he goes, all right, cut to a commercial. During the commercial, he's like, Kathy, now you got to get yourself together. I'm like, I can't. I'm not kidding. I could not stop crying. It's like once it turned on, there was no way to shut it off. We came back from commercial, and I was still crying. And I've talked to so many people who were watching that show at that time and it almost started crying with me because they couldn't believe it either. That had happened. It was just amazing. Yeah, very, very, very fortunate. Very lucky girl, let me tell you.
And there was no warning. They truly blindsided you. They really surprised you with this one. You had no warning whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I don't think my mom even knew, because she would, I would have picked up on something, but no, absolutely no idea at all.
Wow.
And that picture that's on my website of Dick and I, you know, holding my gold record, I had that picture framed in a really nice frame, and I took it to Dick Clark at his office in Burbank. And gave it to him. And he said, you know, he said, nobody has ever brought me a picture like this. He said, I've had a lot of people tell me thank you. But he said, nobody's ever, you know, had it so nicely framed and brought it to me. He said, I'm going to hang this right here behind my desk.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, and I started crying again.
Every time you get around Dick Clark, you end up crying now.
Anytime I think about those wonderful times back then, I start crying. I have to be very careful when I'm doing, you know, an interview like this or I'm on stage, because if I really get too deep into remembering and, you know, feeling it, I'll start crying and I can't stop.
Oh, gosh.
It was, I know, I'm terrible.
Oh, no. That's...
But it's such a wonderful, wonderful thing. I just feel so, God just has blessed me with the opportunity to get to do what I absolutely love and still get to do it.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Kathy Young in San Bernardino soon with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2. More at affordablemusicproductions.com.
You know, shows like this, in San Bernardino on August 18th.
Yeah.
You know, Nathan and his dad and his whole family, they're just wonderful people to put on shows like this, and you know, to do interviews like this. It's so great to keep this wonderful music alive.
It's a labor of love, truly.
That's another song that I wrote. You know, Dream Boy was a song that I recorded in, I want to say, 1964. Maybe it was the last record that I recorded, and that was with Jim Lee on Monogram Records. But that never got airplay. Music was changing. It was going a little bit different. It was more into the Beatles and the English, sound. So it never got played, but that was the best song I ever recorded. I felt it really...
Dream Boy.
I was a little bit more grown up when I recorded A Thousand Stars. I had never kissed a boy. I didn't know what I was singing about. So when I recorded Dream Boy, I could put some emotion into it and some feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the B-side of that one, I'll Love That Man. And that, I felt, was one of my better writing. It's a short little song, but I loved it.
You'll always be my dream boy.
You know, we keep on speaking about A Thousand Stars, and that brings me back to Magic is the Night. Magic is the Night really reminds me of A Thousand Stars. This could be a matter of concern, like, oh, well, it's too much like it. We should not do this. Or maybe it's A Thousand Stars was such a successful formula. Let's try it again with Magic is the Night.
Yeah, Birthday didn't do so well. Let's kind of go back. You know, little bit different, but still with the innocence and a more of A Thousand Stars sound. Jim Lee wrote Magic is the Night, and right now I cannot remember what the other side was.
Oh, I can tell you.
Oh, what was it?
Well, see, it's again, Magic is the Night, this nice, gentle, pretty thing. And then for me, I love the flip side. It was do-do-do-do.
Yeah, that was a good one, too, and I don't remember who wrote that. But Magic is the Night is one of course, A Thousand Stars will always be my absolute favorite. It really is. To sing it, it just is so comfortable. I can do that song in my sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But Magic is the Night, I would almost say my second favorite.
Oh, okay.
I love singing that song, and it's a great song. It didn't make it either. You know, it's just kind of one of those things that, boy, when you hit it right, you hit it right, and yet timing is everything.
Oh, most certainly. And it's amazing, too, for you to be, you started at the top. You know, it would have been maybe more rewarding to start somewhere closer to the bottom and work your way up and eventually see success and have some growth. But you had nowhere to go but down from number one. Oh, what a horrible
thing.
And
that's okay with me.
Yeah.
The fact that I got to do it. Back in those days, you know, I always felt like I didn't have to earn my way here. I didn't have to do all of the smaller place.
I got to
start and just go boom. Again, I was really lucky, but I feel in a lot of ways I missed out on a lot of things, too.
Oh, yeah,
but
most
I'll
certainly.
Take it.
Yeah, sure.
I'll take it however I got it.
Yeah, wouldn't trade it for the world there. You know, earlier we spoke of Roy Orbison, the Everly Brothers, the Shirelles, and folks like that. So I'm curious, at such a young age, and of course your mom was there helping guide you, but just talking about learning to work a stage or learning to work the audience or stage presence, what can you think of with folks like, say, Shirley Alston Reeves or Ray Charles, Neil Sedaka, or if you learned by watching them? What are some things that you feel you picked up early on from them?
You know, I think the biggest thing that I ever learned was to own the stage.
Okay.
When you're out there, it's yours. Don't worry about what anybody else has done or anything. Just for me, anyway, this was how I did it, because I'd only been in front of an audience twice. before A Thousand Stars was a hit. I had done my talent show in junior high school, and I had won 1 year, and I came back the next year and won again. That was the only time I had sung in front of an audience.
Ever.
Otherwise,
you weren't playing around town or anything like that. You went straight.
No. Well, I sang in the choir, my mom's choir, in a church. So, you know, I sang there, and I sang solos quite often. But that was church. That was everybody I knew. And so I used to walk out there. I never had stage fright. I just could not wait to get out there with that band and that microphone and those kids out there just wanting to dance and, you know, hold hands and listen to these beautiful words and just kind of sway back and forth together if it was at a dance or a show with an audience. So enjoy it and give them what they want. Just sing your heart out.
Wow.
And I did. And really, I never had anybody give me any pointers, not about stage presence, or I didn't ask anybody. I just watched and picked up on the fact that when they were out there, they gave it their all, and that was what I did.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Back now to Kathy Young in San Bernardino in mid-August. Details later in the program. Just ahead, getting kidnapped by the Everly Brothers. It's all fun and games, but the Army took it kind of seriously.
You had touched on something a minute ago. Oh, the Everly Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
We did 3 days in Hawaii, which is where I was for my 16th birthday.
Poor you.
I know. Life's tough, huh?
Waikiki again.
Well, I was a huge surfer.
Oh, that's right.
Surf. I grew up surfing Huntington Beach and Trestles and just up and down Southern California coast all the time. And so my mom and I went over, and I did 3 shows with the Everly Brothers. But I would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, grab my board, hit the beach, go out, surf all day, come back, run into the beauty salon, get my hair done, jump in my Jeep with my mom, go do the show, come back the next day, hit the beach. So we're doing, I think it was the Civic Auditorium, the Everly Brothers, Jerry Fuller, Dickie Doo and the Don'ts, me, and I think there was one other person, I can't remember who it was. But during shows in Hawaii, the kids will come up and they'll put leis around your neck. While you're singing, you just lean down and they just keep putting leis on you, and to the point where it gets up to your chin, and someone will come off out of the wings and take all these off, and then more kids bring more and more and more. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. They're so sweet.
Nice.
They're so giving and loving. This, I'm pretty sure, was the first night, and then we were going to do a second night at the Civic Auditorium. And I'm singing, and all of a sudden, nothing. I'm singing, and nothing is coming out. I'm like, what? Ah, nothing. I can't sing. There's no sound coming out. And I turned around to the band, to Dickie, and I went like, I'm pointing to my throat, and I'm like, zero, nothing. So the MC came on and said, sorry, folks, and I walked off stage, and I got off, and Phil Everly came over to me, and he said, you have laryngitis. He said, you're going to have it for 24 hours, and then your voice can come back perfect. He said, it's this little tiny flower that some people are allergic to, and you lose your voice. I was like, oh, my gosh. He was right. 24 hours later, the next night, the next show, my voice was back. So they asked that they not bring leis with those little tiny white flowers on them.
Oh, my gosh. I never would have thought of that.
No, me either.
The worst I would have considered was maybe a bee coming out of one of the flowers. I mean, that's it. Wow.
Yeah. So the next night we came back and we did the show again and my voice was back and that was great. And then the next night we were at Schofield Army Base.
Okay.
So they had this great big stage set up outside and all these chairs all around for all these guys to sit, and I'm just looking at a sea of hats. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in seventh heaven here. just all these men everywhere. Now I'm just 16, but still, you know.
Yeah, it's a thought. Yeah.
I like a good looking guy, nice guy.
Yeah.
So anytime I was on a show with anybody, I would stand in the wings and watch.
Mm-hmm.
I watched every person, everybody, every show. The only time I wouldn't be in the wings is if I was getting dressed or getting ready to come on. I was always in the wings watching everybody. So I'm standing there at the base of these stairs, which are, you know, the stage was maybe 5 feet off the ground, you know, big open thing. And so I'm standing there watching the Everly Brothers, and their limo is pulled up there at the base of the stairs, ready for when they come off. They just jump in the limo and, you know, they're gone.
Okay.
So I'm standing there watching them, and they come off the stage. The doors open. One of them jumps in. The other one, as he's coming down, grabs me, pulls me into the limo, and we take off. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I've been kidnapped by the Everly Brothers. And they were the nicest guys and so much fun. And just, you know, I spent, you know, this is my third day working with them, and they were fun. They were neat. So we leave the base in this big, long, black stretch limo. We leave the base, and we go to the local radio station, which didn't happen to be too far away from Schofield. We walk in the door. Hi, guys. We're taking over tonight. You can take a break. So Phil and Don and I sat down, and we took telephone requests, and we talked to people on the air and played their calls that they wanted and told stories and everything, and just having a great time. And I said to the guys, I said, you know, I said, my mom and dad are probably wondering where I am. They might not have seen that you guys grabbed me and we took off. So over the air, we told the audience, we said, hey, if anybody has the number for Schofield Army Base, would you call them and tell Kathy's parents that she's okay? They had shut down the base because they thought I really had been kidnapped.
Oh, no.
Nobody had really seen them grab me and take me. And they thought I was truly kidnapped.
Oh, no.
It was so great. It's so sad, but so great.
Some sort of...
We had such a good time.
Oh, my gosh. Incredible.
So then the next day, I'm back out on the waves, surfing out there all day. It was a wonderful, fantastic, yeah.
I'm glad you came back to surfing, because that takes us into something that I wanted to work in, and now I don't have to do it subtly at all. And that's going to be Shoot That Curl. Before I say that, is I have to say that one of my favorite interviews that I've done ever, really, has been with Chris Montez.
And I can imagine.
Yeah, oh my God, he's wonderful. I didn't know this when I spoke with him, but when I was researching into you, this is when I found I could only track down four songs with you and Chris Montez. Let's see, what, we had Shoot That Curl. It Takes Two, All You Had to Do Was Tell Me, and You're the One. Is this everything that you recorded with him? Just maybe two records, two sides?
It is.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Shoot That Curl, you know, beyond title suggestion, it is a very surf music sound as well. But again, I think this was quite a different sound for you, I think.
It was, and it was so fun. And Chris wrote that, and we were both surfers at the time, and we had overdubbed my voice onto his three songs. You know, it was his original recordings, and then we overdubbed my voice onto it to sing the harmonies. And then we needed a flip side, and I can't remember what the other one was, but for some reason it didn't work, what the flip side was on his record, but for some reason it wasn't going to work for the two of us. And so Chris said, hey, I've got a song. We were both surfers. Oh, yeah, let's do that. That's how Shoot That Curl came to be.
It's a really cool one, a really fun one. Listening to KVCR, it's on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org, I'm David Fleming in conversation with Kathy Young in San Bernardino soon with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. You already mentioned that A Thousand Stars and Magic is the Night, that's probably your favorite, number one and number two, so that may answer this. Do you prefer the ballads as compared to, say, Sparkle and Shine and Shoot That Curl and some of the more up-tempo things? Do you really prefer the ballads as far as singing and connecting?
Nope, just that I guess the up-tempo songs that I recorded other than Shoot That Curl, aren't really my favorite songs. Someone to Love, the flip side of Happy Birthday Blues.
Right.
That's kind of one of my favorites. I like that, but the audience doesn't know it. So when I do a show that has a bit more time, I like to do my version of songs that the audience knows, like the Shirelles, Will You Love Me Tomorrow, Dream Lover, Chains. You know, I like to do things like that everybody knows and can sing along with and, you know, just have a good time.
It seems I found you doing a Neil Sedaka song somewhere, but...
Absolutely. Breaking Up is hard to do.
Yes, that was it. That was it. As soon as I opened my mouth, all I could think of was Calendar Girl, but you wouldn't be exactly singing that. But, well, speaking
of... I love to do that one because back on that show at the Brooklyn Paramount, Neil was on that show, and it was such an interesting theater. You had to go up this small, tiny, winding staircase. It just like when you think of ballets and the girls going up the staircase,
sure.
You know, up to their floor. That was what we had to do. All of us on the show, we had to go up this tiny, winding staircase and floor 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'd go up and down all the time because I had to do homework all the time.
Oh.
And Neil would help me do my math homework.
Huh.
And he and his mom invited my mom and I over to their house for Christmas dinner, December of 1960.
And you went.
Oh, of course we did. His mom was so nice. And Neil, of course, is just one of the nicest, most genuine people you can meet. And back then, he said, you know, Kathy, I'm going to write a song for you someday. He goes, I just love your voice, and, you know, you have this energy. And he goes, I'm going to write a song for you.
Gosh.
So when I do shows now, and I do Breaking Up is Hard to Do, I always kind of give it this little intro of, well, Neil, you promised you'd write a song for me someday. So I'll just borrow this one from you.
Nice.
And I ran into him. I don't know, maybe it was 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a book signing for the children's book that he wrote, Waking Up is Hard to Do. I'm sitting there waiting for him to come in. I bought like 5 copies to have them all signed for friends and grandkids,
sure,
and everything. And he walked in and he looked at me, and I'm looking back at him. Now, I haven't seen him since 1960.
Oh, my gosh.
1960.
Okay.
And he walked in and he just keeps looking at me. And finally, I walked up and I said, hi, Neil. I said, my name. He goes, I know, Kathy Young. He goes, everybody, this is Kathy Young. I said, how in the world do you remember me from 1960? He goes, I don't know. He said, we had a real bond. I'm like, yeah, we did. I mean, it just touched me again. Of course, I started crying.
Of course. There you go again. Kathy Waterworks Young.
There you go.
One of my last things here, I found a couple of recordings of you doing 1,000 Stars a cappella with the Earth Angels, and that's really incredible. It makes it more of a doo-wop thing than a soft ballad. So how did this rendition come about and this association with the Earth Angels?
My singing with the Earth Angels was for the PBS show that was performed at the Benedum in Pittsburgh in 2010. The Innocents had performed with me on that show in 2002, but they were not able to do that show with me. We had lost Darren a few years before. He had passed away, unfortunately. And so they had brought in the Earth Angels to do this show with me. And I got to tell you, those guys speak Spanish. They don't speak English, but they sounded so good, you would never guess that those boys did not speak English.
Right.
Never. So this was after the show. We were in the hotel lobby. They were in the lobby, and I just happened to come wandering downstairs, and they were just singing live a cappella right there. And, hey, Kathy, come over here and let's sing 1,000 Stars. So I started singing. They started singing, and another group joined them as well. And I think I had almost 8, maybe 9 guys singing with me. It was so incredible. I didn't want to stop. I just wanted, okay, how many verses can we add to this song? Let's just keep going here. It was so neat. And somebody happened to be recording it. It was perfect. It was so much fun. You know, music is so wonderful. You can do it anywhere. You just start singing and or playing, you know, playing guitar, piano, whatever. It just makes everybody happy.
Yeah. And in this case, you could do the iced tea plunge, fall backwards, and be caught by 9 guys just there for support. Nice. Wow.
Well, if it was me, they wouldn't have caught me because I'm so accident prone. I would have probably fallen. So falling in the pool, knocking myself out.
Oh, yes.
Continued all of my life. Luckily, it's never been anything terrible, horrible, but let me tell you, if anybody's going to fall and break a leg or, you know, whatever, it's going to be me.
Yep. Now, there's something that I can't let go, and that is just asking about some of the hobbies that you have listed at your website. You are currently on Michael Bondelli Precision Driving Team.
You know, I was, but my website is so old that I have not been able to update it, and that's why it says under reconstruction on my website.
Okay.
I was on his driving team doing precision driving in movies and commercials.
So you weren't running out there changing the lug nuts and gassing it up and everything?
No. Okay. Oh, no, but I can.
Oh, cool.
I grew up working on engines.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Oh, yes, I'm the great.
I'm going to, I guess, close by asking about another song that didn't really go anywhere for you. The Great Pretender, okay? This was a song that was so huge with the Platters that you'd think there would have been at least some sort of, at least, resurgence interest. So while not making it to the top 40, I can't help but feel that this one would always be popular in performance with the audiences, if not radio play. The Great Pretender.
You know, I don't think I have ever done that song since I recorded it.
Mm.
I would love to do it because it's such a great song.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I already have so many ballads that were my
true
hits and semi-hits that I try to limit it to just those, and then I do up-tempo because I seem to be the queen of ballads, and I don't want to put everybody
right
to sleep.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Cool. So, no, I love that song, but I don't do it. I'll have to kind of, if I have a longer set, I'll have to try and see if I can add that one back in. That would be a great idea.
It would be phenomenal. Idea. You couldn't do it this concert anyway. We've got Sonny Turner, and I know he belts that one, so that one's fantastic.
And he is fantastic. You know, everybody on this show is so good. I work with these guys all the time, and they are all fantastic. So, boy, if anybody has any quavering thoughts about coming to this show, don't hesitate. Come on out. You know, if you just want to have a good time, you just can't do any better than oldies concerts, and this one especially.
Oh,
this
yes.
one is going to be fantastic.
Pretending that you're still around.
Still around.
I've been speaking with Kathy Young in San Bernardino soon with Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll Volume 2, along with the Dukes of Doo-Wop, Charles Weldon, Gene Chandler, Jimmy Clanton, Larry Chance and the Earls, Norman Fox and the Rob Roys, and from the Platters, Sonny Turner. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. Thanks again to Kathy Young and to Nathan Gothels of Affordable Music Productions. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Jessica Greenwell, Shireen Awad, and KVCR General Manager Keith Birkfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KVCR is composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVCR's programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org.